You're listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. This talk was given at 2007 Frankfurt Avenue. For more information, check out circleofhope.net or join us in person on Sunday evenings at 5 and 7 p.m.
So I don't really remember the time before I could swim. That's because I swam as like a little baby, and then we had access to a pool when I was real little. So before my some kind of cognitive ability or some sort of mental thing happened and I could remember stuff, I was already in the water. So when my children were small, we didn't have such access. And when they were learning how to swim, it was a little bit different than I was told my childhood was. They wanted to hang out in the places where they could stand, and they wanted to wear snorkel masks all the time. And they wanted to like fish around and fish crap off the bottom of a 3-foot pool. What I was really psyched about was when I got them to move further and further towards the deep end, where it's actually fun to go pick crap off the bottom of a pool, if you're into that sort of thing, and to leave what is sort of like comfortable, what feels even safe sometimes, to go and learn the thrill and the joy. Now, if even the ocean, where the water gets a little bit deep. Snook hit this point earlier about how walking in the way of Jesus is like leaving what is normal and comfortable, brain space, heart space, and embracing some mystery, embracing things that you don't completely understand, embracing a way of life that is going to constantly stretch you beyond your limitations. That's how growth happens, right? You know this. When you're learning crap that you don't already know. That's like why learning is exciting. I mean, the main reason, I guess. I mean, some people are like, oh, it's just fun to learn. A lot of people, I find, think that they don't like learning. They think that they know enough to get by, and they don't like studiously. I mean, once they're done with school, especially, speaking as a person who just wrapped up formal education probably forever, you know, like maybe it's not like, I just want to go get a book about something that I know nothing about and just pour into it for hours a day, you know, just to like really feel alive. You know, I feel like I did that for about 10 years, and I'm good for a while. Reading stuff that expands me slowly. But to follow Jesus is not just about doing the right things and not doing the bad things. It's not about believing the right stuff or not believing the right stuff. We're inundated with a overemphasis on belief or having correct assumptions about the world as if that's going to help you that much. I think it helps enough to have a little bit of faith to get into the game. But it's easy for people who follow Jesus to get comfortable, because so much of the benefits about following Jesus in the church are accessible, and we want to hold on to those things. Sometimes people even lose their faith and hang on to the church. It's easy to get comfy where radical trust drifts towards complacency and taking things for granted. And that's a large part of why we have this conviction that we're meant to go deep with God. So before we go too far into this, this is a bulleted list, so the outline of my speech is already created, and this is it. So you'll know when we get to the end, and I'll put an invisible bullet at the bottom that says wrap up, because that's what I'll try to do. Turn to your neighbor, tell a 30-second explanation of a spiritually deep person. Somebody that you've encountered, somebody that you know, either what was it about them that was spiritually deep? What was it? Why would you say they were a deep person? What was it about them? Can you list a couple things about it? Could you have a story that's like, oh, this is what a spiritually deep person is? Don't think too hard about it. Just tell one person like 20 seconds and then listen to them too. And I'll call you back with a song. So what were a couple of the things that you said? What's a deep person like? Just say like one thing. Just have 10 people do it real quick.
Really honest.
Trusting before anything else.
Okay.
Calm confidence.
Mm.
experience real joy.
A devout worshiper, kind of genuine,
able to weather any storm.
Takes it slow.
Just a couple more. Let's see if we're really understanding this.
Laughter after torture.
Ooh.
Acceptance of history.
One who cares for the poor. Checks in with God.
I think we're getting it. Now just honestly ask yourself, do you want to be a spiritually deep person? Do you want to be like the things that we're just talking about? Is that where your life's trajectory is headed? Is that where you feel a sense of calling towards? Not just evaluating yourself of how you're not it now or something. That's corny. But where do you feel called and compelled? And are those things not super compelling? And how are we adjusting our hearts and our paths and our behavior, our relationships, that help us walk in that path? That's what we're saying. When we're saying we're meant to go deep with God, this is our natural pull. We're meant for it. This is where you are headed. And it's good. I'd say there's a bunch of spiritually deep people among us right now. It's not something that you have to aspire to too hard. You have to just keep walking in the way that you know, walking in the way that we keep teaching each other, walking in the way that you've been taught. To have a full relationship with God, it will deepen you. Here's some Bible that helps. So I like the letters that Paul wrote when he was locked up. Those are my favorite ones. And Philippians is particularly short and brilliant, and everything is kind of like, just rock out. And that's like when somebody who says that is and they're super rich and it appears their life is really good and everything, it's irritating to me. All you do is have to be happy. Okay, Paul the Apostle is not that dude, FYI. He's kind of reaching for some joy under some circumstances that include being shipwrecked and getting beat down many times, going through the labyrinthine Roman legal process so we can have a spiritual discussion with the leaders. And he's writing to these early Christians and he says, rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice. Let your gentleness be known to everyone. The Lord is near. Do not worry about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, that's asking, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. That's what we're talking about. So there's these proverbs that help flesh out the conviction. To have a full relationship with God, one must live in an environment where worship can be learned, the spiritual disciplines gained, spiritual warfare fought. How are you working with the environment that you live in? Do you feel like you're interacting with it? Are you going scorched earth on it? Are you a litter bug? And you're like, no. I mean, I got that one down. No littering around here, okay? But like, how are you doing the spiritual stuff? Are you caring for the little plants? Are you allowing yourself to be cared for? Is this a daily operation or is it weekly or a bi-monthly kind of? What kind of attention are you giving the environment? That's what Circle of Hope, our basic thing is creating an environment. That's what we're doing together. When we're creating an environment, when Daniel Snook gives us a heartfelt way to enter into this song and starts calling things out that are smaller than the love of Jesus, that's the kind of curated environment that I find so moving. Good call, by the way, Snook. You're really doing good, I would say, even by being tonight, here tonight, being who you are, who we are together, and forming cells. I wonder how many of us are still trying to learn worship rather than how many of us are kind of getting stuck in our definitions and our categories and thinking about how others are doing it and whether or not we want to play along with what they're doing? Are you resting on the spiritual disciplines that you once developed, thinking like, well, I already laid the groundwork for this amazing connection years ago? Or are you always working on your interior life by trying to be stretched and stretch, by reaching, by exploring ideas that you don't even have the language for? We want more people to have access to the environment, and that's what the healthy environment does. We also say that prayer is the key to fulfilling our mission of transformation. You know, when transformation being our mission is pretty cool, in my honest opinion, because transformation is such a funny thing. And my favorite transformation happens when little weird bugs that are fuzzy and cute create this very strange cocooned by things that come out of their butt. And then if you crack it open at the wrong time, it's primordial goo. And before, this is caterpillars, by the way, these are the cool fuzzy little creatures. It's goo. They turn into liquid. And before they become the glorious butterfly that we all remark upon when we see, they're straight goo in a sack. Cuteness to butterfly, which is ultimate cuteness, goes through some weird turns. And transformation is like pretty much always like that. It's never just this like, I'm just going in a linear fashion, just towards the sky. Weird stuff happens, and prayer is key to that. And I like that there's more people who are trying to pray, learning about prayer together. There was about almost a dozen people yesterday getting together to learn centering prayer as a discipline that that Jordan put together for us. Very cool. We say that solitude and silence are crucial tools for experiencing God's presence. So much of even like, let me just say this, a bunch of us have been practicing learning how to do spiritual retreats or personal retreats. I think it's great, especially when there's no Wi-Fi, especially when you can't use a computer, especially when you have to just be fallow, rest, and connect. And that's I think, a good goal for most retreats. But we have opportunities for silence and solitude every day. Some of us less than others, for various reasons, particularly little kids make it hard by law. You have to know where they are and take care of them, and you want to do that because you're a caregiver. They make it difficult. They get, if all goes well, they get bigger. They get more independent, and you have more opportunities. But even an opportunity for 5 minutes of solitude, to me, the temptation for this, I carry around this piece of glass in my pocket. It's so compelling. Oh, moment of solitude and silence, or moment of silence and cell phone. I mean, I don't want to just judge myself too harshly publicly, you know, because, you know, I'm like trying to make a point about a talk that you can relate to real easily. But we have these opportunities, whether they're small or they're big. Not everybody can go take two years off of work and go walk the earth for a while and just, you know, enjoy the presence of God. Most of us have to find these little spaces, whether it's a day here or 10 minutes here, 15 minutes there, a morning, a discipline. But learning silence and solitude and how to have them be filled with presence are difficult, but worth it. Here's one of my favorite ones that we say. Without worship, without worship, a person shrinks. Worship is not just coming to a meeting. Worship is not just singing songs. It's about entering into wonder and showing some awe, even some adoration for God. It's to love Jesus in ways that make you more alive on the inside. I'd hung out with a bunch of people at Hoodstock over the last couple days, 11th and Dauphin at Life to Grow Farm, and it was amazing to just be around so many people that understand worship, and they just get it. I mean, it helps when you have a petting zoo right next to the bike-powered sound system. And there's pony rides, horsey rides, little goats that you can feed, and chickens that little kids can pick up. You want to see what worship looks like? Let a 9-year-old hold a chicken, put it on their shoulder, and just start walking around like, is it still there? And the friends start telling them that it's pooping all over them. And of course, that's like the grossest thing ever. And it's not really happening. And it's kind of like, is there poop? Is this chicken going to, you know, peck my ear off or what? And it turned out it was a rooster. But that helps when there's 19 graffiti artists who took about, 100 feet of fence front and back and covered it that day with beautiful graffiti pieces. It's easy to enter into the awe, especially if you don't know jack about how art gets made like me, especially like with spray cans. And it also really challenged what I think graffiti artists look like. Do you know about any graffiti artists? They don't look like what you think they do. Some gnarly folks. It's beautiful, beautiful gnarliness. But it was a party, and it was full of joy and vigor and full of great conversations, full of wonder. People coming together and just saying, like, this is awesome. We are having a good time where we're meeting people and hanging out with people that I didn't think I'd be able to hang out with. But bridges were being built, barriers being crossed. Worship was easy to taste. Here's one that's super hard for most people that I've met over the years. Accepting failure and moving on in hope is basic to living in the grace of God. Some of us have gotten a lot better at failing. I appreciate that. Because there's nothing worse than being bad at failing. That's how I feel sometimes. You know, where it's like, wow, like I'm like, this is how I feel when I'm like terrible. Like I'm being so terrible that I'm terrible at failing. I can't even have a productive fail. I can't even have a fail that makes some kind of sense, but it's just decimation. It's just, I had it and I dropped it and it broke. And that's how small my mind is. Failure can actually become a great teacher, especially if you want to start to get a handle on grace, which has very little to do with success, if you could imagine that. If you were just super successful, you would get your brain all twisted, thinking that this is God blessing you for being so awesome. Or like these are your great decisions have led to something, not a lot of other factors. All right, here's one that's the most fun. How we relate sexually is a spiritual communal matter. It can't be reduced purely to a discussion of private expression or individual rights. It has been so refreshing for me as an adult to live among people who don't want to just talk about prohibitions all the time when it comes to sex, to talk about how people are doing it wrong. It is refreshing for me to be able to have conversations with people about how what is making us more whole, about how to relate in ways that deepen community, in ways that actually teach us about love, teach other people about love. I have a problem with my thought right now. A bad characteristic of the American church is when we start talking about how we relate sexually, it's a given on how the rules are going to work. And you're just, if you follow the rules, you're going to be fine. And I'm sorry, but that's a big fat lie. Nobody's fine, especially sexually. We are jacked. And when we find places and people who love us that we can actually experience some kind of beautiful sexual connection with, that's not something that we should just poop on all the time. That just sounded weird. I was being like so literal and then just jumped to an idiom made some kind of sense, sorry. What I'm trying to say is I'm happy that we keep helping expand the conversation to what is going on, not just in our hearts, but how does it relate with other people? Your sexual behavior, your sexual longing rarely ends with you. Even if you think that it's just happening with you in a romantic comedy or you in a screen or however that's kind of working, talking and relating to other people helps us stay healthy, helps us build community, it helps build families up. That's what we're going for, not just trying to tell other people how wrong they're doing it. Most of us get a sense of how wrong we're doing it often enough. But rather than just talking about sex lives that are private, you know, this isn't licensed to just jump in everybody's face and just say, hey, I think you're doing this, and I think that's weird. Suspend judgment for a second and have a spiritual matter. Let your deepest self relate and have conversations, especially about how we're relating sexually and how that's going. But it's good to have people that you trust that you can even talk to about the sexual relations you have, the people that you're not having sex with, to be able to talk to them about how it's going. And it's freeing. Christians, for the most part in the U.S., here's what I want to say before, they're kind of uptight. Ever engage in a casual conversation about pornography with Christians? Probably not, unless you like went to some weird conference and like had to do it in a talking circle. You know where it gets discussed real easily? Among dudes who play baseball, is what I've learned over the last 10 years playing baseball with a bunch of gnarly dudes. They just talk about it. They don't know that you're supposed to keep it a dark secret. Nobody told them that they're going to be in trouble if they talk about what they're actually into or wish they weren't into or are mystified by why they did this something. But when friendships develop in those settings, there's a bit of freedom and openness. That's the kind of space that we're trying to do as a church, where it's not just like, hey, let's just jump into extreme intimacy with somebody I barely know. Let's not do that either. But let's make possibilities. You already have people that you know and you trust, or people that you could. As the world pulls us more virtual, we'll keep struggling to live rooted in real time. The pastors did a video cast last week that was about this kind of thing. It's about community. It's about relationships. One of the important things about living rooted in real time, a critical element to your life, to your health and the life of the community, is empathy. And if you relate only to people that you don't actually see in person, empathy gets strained. Empathy shrinks. Empathy goes downhill. It's the difference between, you know, Braveheart and Eye in the Sky. Starring Jesse from Breaking Bad. You've seen this movie about drones? It's about the trauma. It's Jesse, first of all. Breaking Bad, you've seen, I guess. But I don't know, that's his only name for me. But the difference between having to go up and have a battle with somebody who has an axe and you have a sword and you're going to look them in the eyes and make a noise and then hack it out, or pushing a button, having no audio and watching a screen react. And there is trauma in both, but they're different kinds of trauma. And in relationships, when you can just blast an email in all caps to somebody, that's a cheap conflict. When you have to actually say something that's probably even a little out of pocket to somebody and see them react like shocked, like, dang, I don't even know that you were like capable of being so mean, that's good for you. When you're mean and you see that you hurt somebody, that helps you understand a little bit about the human condition and how relationships work. So anyway, when it goes virtual, we have to just keep using virtual tools because the world, our culture is going that way. People relate that way. Some people that are, you know what happens on social media if you do that. And you know that certain people, it seems like all of their close friends are never in the same room with them. And to me, I think that's heartbreaking. It's not like a judgment, but I know that there's more. And trying to develop empathy and relationships in real life together, while also extending and hoping to touch and make more opportunities for people, is what we're going for. That's the last one, so we may want to talk about some of these. But if you're going deep, you just got to consider the Puerto Rico Trench for a second. You know about the Puerto Rico Trench? It's the deepest point of the Atlantic Ocean. So there's like three deeper places in the world. They're all in the Pacific. We've talked about them before, so I gave you a new one. This one is at its deepest point is 8648 meters. You know meters. You know that's wicked deep. It's my bad. Only the scientists know meters. That's like 28,373 feet. This is just trivia time. 28,000 feet down. You know what? Anything that's approximately 28,000 feet up? Everest. And it's good. Bentley! Boo-boo! How about a second thing? A second thing is 28,000 feet high. K2, it's a mountain. It's famous. It's number two, that's why it's called K2. And then Kanchenjunga is also 28,000. Still shorter than the Puerto Rico Trench is deep. Just give a sense of just how deep this weird, weird part of the ocean is where two plates connect and it just is like... Who hangs out down there? And who wants to? We're not even... They're monsters is what they are. You can call them weird fish if you want, but the straight... I mean, sea monsters. What kind of animal doesn't need light to live? The kind of animal that you don't want to meet in face to face. But you need all kinds of equipment to get down there. You don't just like sploosh and just go for a dive, right? To go 28,000 feet, you can't even go 30 feet like that. Most of us. Some people can, and they're pretty good. But the to be meant to go deep is to even maybe know that 1,500 miles from here is wicked deep. And with that depth comes mystery and monsters, but also mystery. And to even be curious about exploring the depths of the planet that we live on, you need some gear. What kind of gear do you need? To be a spiritually deep person, you need the gear too. And you can't just become deep. You can't just like become patient, right? Or you can't just become calm all the time. These are disciplines, these are habits, these are aspirations, these are callings. And that's the kind of people we're hoping to be, is the kind of people who are living into this trajectory, this longing to be deep with God, where we connect at our deepest places and are able to share out of the abundance of the goodness that is so much more filling and nutritious than the things that we're pulled to real fast all the time.
Thanks for listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. If you want to talk about it or get connected to a cell, you can find one under our Connect dropdown at circleofhope.net.